your tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step, step by step, I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
What's up, dude?
How are you?
All right. All righty. Good evening, everybody. How's everyone doing tonight?
Great.
All right. Welcome, of course, to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday night, Alcoholics and God. It's our speaker step series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is John. Thanks for coming. In a minute, we're going to get started by doing a two-minute meditation. So if you can, just get situated. I know our setup's a little different tonight, but if you don't mind, just kind of spread out. Get comfortable. Don't get too comfortable. We don't want you to fall asleep, but we're gonna get connected here. Just 2 minutes meditation. Fred turns down the lights. If you can, also, please turn off any device that may make noise, phone, gadgets, whatever that may be, because it will distract others. We take this time, like I said, to get connected to God. Let the craziness of your day, if you had one, let it kind of drift away, and ask God to help you stay focused tonight. So is everyone ready? We looking good? Fog light prayer tonight. It's on our banner up here. God,
let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find
relief. Amen. There's a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out in which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. This is also from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the spiritual experience. It's found in the back of the book, Appendix 2. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one. So it's pretty important to know what that's all about. Jeremy's going to come up and read that for me.
Jeremy, and I'm an alcoholic. The term spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening, are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls an educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reflection to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most empathetically, we wish to say that the alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation.
All right, thanks, Jeremy. So please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so just turn your phones off for airplane meeting mode. Restrooms are outside those doors. If you need to use those, do so quietly. We've got our coffee out there, too, so that's kind of closed for the meeting. And now we are going to call up Pat. Pat's been with us for a few weeks now. We've had a couple breaks, weeks off, but many things that engaged or interest me about Pat, he actually was just talking about this, is how much fun he has in recovery. He's been given a gift from God by going through this process in our book, and he explains that wonderfully, and he gives it away freely, and he enjoys his life, and that attracts me. When I got here, I wanted to stop drinking, but I also wanted to be happy and enjoy my life. And this man does that. So, Pat.
Oh, I just got tangled up with the technology there. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Pat Rogan. And thanks to the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the program of AA, I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and for that, I'll be forever grateful. AA didn't just give me my life back, but it gave me one worth living, and I have an absolute blast. I do. I have an absolute blast. I love recovery. Thank you for ever thought of giving me this. I was sitting there going, I forgot water. But I have an absolute blast. I just love recovery. I do. It just excites me. We were just talking about that before the meeting. It's this ability to touch people whose lives, otherwise would be hopeless, and to be able to touch those lives and give them hope. And help some of them recover, which is just an amazing thing. I get to do, and that's what we were talking about at the beginning, is I get to do a meeting that I take into a halfway house where there's 200 guys and 50 women that are there in lieu of jail or as a condition of release. And to be part of that message, to explain to somebody who's done 20 years in prison why they keep going back to prison for the first time in their lives and see that light come on, is just an amazing thing to be part of, you know. And those are the intangibles that I talk about when I say a light beyond my wildest dreams. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the car or the woman or the money. I'm talking about that, and it's unexplainable. You know, I think I said this before when I was here. I used to hear people come from the podium and get up and say, I have a light beyond my wildest dreams, and I want to say, do you know where the F you are? You know, you're in an AA meeting, pal. You're a loser, you know? Like, it don't get any worse than this. You know, this is like the bottom. You're in an AA meeting. Maybe I need to go up and tell him where he really is. And then in the real world, he ain't worth shit, you know? But I didn't know what he was talking about. You know, he was talking about something you can't touch. You know, you can only feel it. And you can't even explain it. It's the intangibles. It's the presence of God is what it is. And to be able to do that and be part of that is just amazing to me. I know we're supposed to talk about steps 8 and 9 today. Hopefully we'll get there. Because I kind of want to back up to 6 and 7. You know, I used to say, how the hell do you do 2 meetings on 6 and 7? And 1 6 lines, 1 7 lines. I mean, how do you do that? And the longer I'm around here, I could do 4 weeks on 6 and 4 weeks on 7. You know, it's sometimes it seems like the longer I'm around here, the more broken I appear to be. Or maybe the more aware of my brokenness I am, because 6 and 7 is so key. I think everything pyramids right here. You know, everything is about exposing the perversion of those instinctual drives and how those instinctual drives have interfered with all of my relationships with God, with myself, with you. They've interfered with all of my relationships, and that it's really the cause of all my problems. That in seeking to satisfy those instinctual drives, I've stepped on the toes of everybody. I've distanced myself from God. I'm full of guilt and remorse and shame because of the people's toes I've stepped on, and you're in conflict with me because I've stepped on your toes. And it's put me in conflict. And these next 2 steps in 8 and 9 are about repairing that, about repairing those relationships. In this peak of 6 and 7, as Father Dowling says, the steps that separate the men from the boys, at this peak, if some transformation doesn't take place, nothing is going to be fixed in 8 and 9. The demonstration has to come before the words, at least some semblance of demonstration. I mean, you know, they need to see some kind of change taking place in our attitudes and our behaviors before our words mean anything. You know, and it's a struggle, right? I don't know about for you, but for me, it's a struggle. I often wonder if I'll ever completely overcome those drives, and I doubt that I will. And the story that comes to mind, and one of the stories I wanted to share last week, that 2 weeks ago when I was here, that I didn't have time to because I, you know, I think I need time to fill in 6 and 7, and I go off on this 6 and 7 tangent. And it is that I'm sitting, I was driven back to the church of my childhood, which that story I'll tell when we get to step 11, and I didn't go willingly. I was driven there. You know, it wasn't like I got up one morning and says, good idea. I got a good idea. I think I'll go back to church. That wasn't the deal. You know, the deal was, as I am in so much freaking agony, what can I do to help myself? And I ended up driven, just like I'm usually driven to my knees, and I don't always go willingly. So I enjoy, and I'm not promoting any church, and I'm not promoting any religion or anything like that, because who would want to go sit somewhere for an hour and listen to somebody speak about spiritual principles from a podium, right? I mean, who would want to do that, right? You guys, I'm sure, would not want to go sit for an hour, like in a church atmosphere, and listen to somebody from a podium talk about principles, right? That's like unheard of, right? You wouldn't do that. So I go often because God's there, you know, and I enjoy it. And I don't feel the guilt that I used to feel when I don't go, but I love going, you know, and so I go any chance I can get. And so I used to think, and I don't know what made me think of it, I guess because I'm kind of sick. And I'm sitting in church, and I'm looking at Father Kay and Father Kelly. He wouldn't care if I use his name. But and Father Kelly is one of those guys that I love about religion. You know, one of those guys that is passionate. He's a guy that's brought to tears during the Mass, right? He's a guy who's channeled, you know, and you feel it. And I was staring at him one day. I always sit like in the right up front, and I'm staring at him, and I go, "Why would anybody want to be a priest? You know, why would anybody want to give up the sex drive? You know, like that's just not normal, right? I mean, why would you want to be celibate for the rest of your life? Now, this is I'm in church, right? I'm supposed to be meditating and praying, but this is what goes through this mind while I'm in there, right? And so it's just dysfunctional. That's what it is. It's just dysfunctional. And he was talking, and I'll tell you what he's talking about in a minute, but while he was talking, and you could tell he's not scripted, he doesn't have any notes, he's just channeled, you know? He's just, once in a while he'll get quiet, and God will light him up, and he's got tears running down his face while he's doing this sermon. And it hit me. He is free. He is free of these instinctual drives. He has such a powerful relationship with God, with the God of his understanding, that he is no more, he is not driven by these instinctual drives anymore. He's free from the bondage of the sex drive. He's free from the bondage of the material instincts. He's free of the bondage of what you think of him. He is, I mean, that's where I want to be. Donovan, that's what I want to be. Now, I don't know if I want to be totally free of the sex drive, but I don't know if I want that much, but I get it. I want to not be driven by those instinctual drives anymore. I want that kind of a connection where I can choose whether I want to be recognized or what I want, and I'm not validated by what you think of me. I'm not validated by what I'm driving, and I'm not validated by my sex instinct. And I've got that. But what the talk was, and it kind of links to 6 and 7. I'll get to 8 and 9 eventually. It's kind of linked there. And he was talking about that there's this belief that good people / holy people are without sin. Right? You see somebody that's at a you kind of put people up on a pedestal, him included. He was talking, me included. There's this belief that I am free from sin. You know, that holy people or good people are free from sin. And he said, and even worse yet, there's this belief that sinners are not capable of good things or holy things. And he was just making it clear that none of us are free from sin, that we're all in this bondage of self. And the only way we get free is through that relationship. The only way I can reel them in is through that relationship. And it kind of gave me, you know, it gives me hope. You know, I was thinking on the way over here, I said, I remember when I knew I had the right sponsor, when my sponsor was, and some of you guys know Garrett M., and how transparent he was able to be, and I think that's what attracted me. But I remember him sharing from the podium one day that he was in church, standing in line for communion, and looking at this piece of art, this woman in front of him, and consumed with this piece of art that was in front of him. And I said, "Oh my God, that's my guy," you know. And that, like, I'm that guy that's in church on my knees, getting ready to have communion, and I'm looking around, you know, and he gave me hope that I could reel that in, and I could reel that in, and I work at reeling that in. And if those, you know, and I say this because if we don't reel them in, these next steps don't mean a heck of a lot. You know, if we go apologize for behavior or admitting our wrongs and behavior, and we're still doing that behavior, then what does that mean? We're still partaking in that behavior. What weight does that hold? You know, there is no weight to it. You know, you're still. I remember my wife telling me, you know that I was no longer a drunken asshole. I was just an asshole. You know. And that's true. And she was right. I was pissed off when she said it, but I realized she was right. Because that's what happened when you take the booze away from a drunken asshole. He just becomes an asshole. And so, it brings us to really what the shortest step in the book is, and that's step 8, which says, you know, we made a list. We have a list. We made it in step 4. That's the step, you know. And that's true to a point. In the mechanics of step 8, that's true to a point. Where we did make the list in step 4. If we followed the directions in the book, we made a list that gave us all the information we need for all the steps, for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. You know, and if we, you know, in our resentments and our fear list, if we listed anybody's name in the first column, that we had something in column 4, if we use a 4-column or a 5-column inventory, it kind of works out the same, where we had harmed them or we have done something to hurt them, then they become part of our 8-step list. And we, our sex conduct that we inventoried, according to the book, and we do another sheet called harms other than sexual. I don't even like to call it a sex inventory. I like to call it a relationship inventory, you know, in pursuit of sex, right? Not just our sex instinct, but in pursuit of sex, who did I hurt, you know? And so we have a list there, and we have a list of other people we harmed other than sexual, and everybody in that first column is our 8-step list. So, but we have unfinished business in this step. We inventoried our resentments, our fear, our sex, and other harms in step 4. But we only examined the resentments and the fear. They gave us a solution to the resentments and the fear. Resentments, we found the solution was what? Prayer, right? We pray for the people who would, as we would a sick friend. You know, we see us in them. Once we start praying for them, we see us in them. We realize that they're sick like we are too, and our attitude becomes, how can I be helpful? The fear was the same solution, prayer. We pray for courage, the ability to walk through the fear. Not to make, I mean, to me, the fear has never gone away. What I have gained is the ability to walk through it. Yeah. But they didn't do anything about the sex harms and the other harms in the 4-step. Because something has to change before we can have any credibility to go on and make that amends. And I think that one of the truest words that Bill speaks in the 12 and 12 in step 8, he says that relationships, defective relationships, is the cause of all of our problems, including our alcoholism, not just our alcoholism. The defective relationships with other people is the cause of all of our problems. And I don't think there's a truer word ever spoken in that book. You know? Because I can see it, and where it comes from is the defective relationships I had as a child, the defective relationships I had as role models, the defective relationships that I had with the people that I hung out with. I had no shot at healthy relationships. You know? I was raised by my dad, who was a drunk, violent cheater who abused my mother in front of his children. My uncle took over that role, same guy. Only thing my uncle didn't do was drink, but violent. You know, we were laughing yesterday. My grandfather was Archie Bunker. Does anybody remember Archie Bunker? My grandfather was Archie Bunker. You know, that's who I was raised by, Archie Bunker. You know, it was either a damn woman in front of him that was blocking traffic, or, you know, a spick, a dago, a womp. I mean, it was just, that was the atmosphere that I grew up in, you know. It was just, they were just haters, you know. And it really, I mean, really, when you look at it, they were haters, you know. that's another story. My father, he's a piece of work. But, you know, one of the tools that I did, and some of you guys in treatment have probably done it, one of the tools that my sponsor gave me when it came to 8 and 9-step work was to look at those defective relationships, see where those defective relationships came from, and we did a timeline, and some of you have done timelines. And, you know, 5-year increments, go back as far as you can remember, do 5-year increments of significant moments in your life, good and bad, you know, and just take a look at your childhood. And I realized... that I didn't spend a lot of time in a home where my parents were together. You know, that I wondered why I always stayed at Uncle Jack and Aunt Mary's, and my Aunt Mary and Uncle Tony's, and I was at my grandmother's house a lot, and then sometimes I was home. But I got bounced around from house to house, and it dawned on me that my parents were breaking up when that happened. You know, they would split, I would end up in some house somewhere, and one of the things that was revealed, you guys might find it funny or not, but one of the things that was revealed, I have this terrible fear of cockroaches, you know. I mean, not the big palmetto bugs, not them big Buicks. Those are okay, you know, but the cockroaches, those little German cockroaches. And I have this, I mean, this phobia. I, like, don't even tell me they're around. Just call the exterminator, you know. My wife will say, you know, there was a scene of cockroach. I know you didn't. No, that was a palmetto bug, you know. No, I saw a cockroach in that. No, I'm telling you, it's a palmetto bug. Call the exterminator. I don't want to hear it, you know. And I, while I'm doing this timeline, I remember staying at times at my Aunt Mary's house, and I'd wake up in the middle of the night and have to go to the bathroom, and there were cockroaches all over the walls, you know, and I couldn't do it. I'd end up peeing the bed, you know, because I couldn't get out of bed because of these cockroaches, you know, but you know, just dysfunction all the way around, you know, and it just. You wonder why kid has a slightly nervous disposition. You know, why is he full of fear when he's going to first grade? You know, and some of that stuff started to become revealed. When the two most important relationships in your life are that are supposed to be the most important relationships in your life aren't there, you don't have too many healthy relationships after that. When you can't trust the two people that you should be able to trust unconditionally, you don't trust too many people after that. Everybody runs. Everybody lies. Everybody cheats. You know, it's just the way it was. You know, we can remember as kids sitting at the window, my dad's going to come pick you up and take you camping with him. You wait hours and hours and hours, he doesn't show up. Nobody shows up. They're liars. You know, and those relationships, and as I look back, went into any relationship I ever had. I had no healthy relationship, ever had a healthy relationship until I was 15 years sober. And I hate to even admit that. Yet I've been a taker in every relationship. I've never been 100% in. I've always had a safety margin, always a backup plan, you know, just in case, because they all run. I was never all in. It was always my selfish, self-centered needs. It was always my need to satisfy those instinctual drives. I need to know that you think well of me because look what I have. I have this girlfriend here. Look at her. You know, and you say, yeah, Pat's got it getting, he's got it going on, you know. I was afraid of sex. I just wanted you to think I was having sex, you know. I didn't care if I had sex or not. I just wanted you to think I was. God forbid I have sex and I'm not good at it. I'd have to kill myself, for God's sake, you know. That'd be terrible. And have that rumor going around, you know, 2-minute Pat or something, you know. Who the hell needs that? You know, I'd rather not. I'd rather just think that I'm good, you know. So this is about repairing those relationships. This whole thing is about repairing those relationships. This is about having healthy relationships. Look, this is why we suggest you don't get into a relationship when you're new in AA or recovery, right? I mean, that's the deal. We're broken people when we get here. We're not capable of giving. We're takers. I need you to validate me. I need you to fill the hole. I need you to fix me. That's what relationships are about in early recovery. My life is unmanageable, and I want to share it with you. That's what it is. Two flakes making a blizzard, man. You know? It's exactly what it is. And here's a piece of advice, ladies and gentlemen. You want a healthy relationship, you want to get into a healthy relationship, get through the steps, and then when you start dating, take sex off the table. Take it off the table. Make it about something else. See if you like each other first. Right? Like give it a month or two or three, you know? See if you can stand each other's company first. First healthy relationship I ever had in my life. That was our first conversation. Can we take sex off the table? She was so relieved. Really? I said, yeah. Can we do that? And we dated for 3 months before we even talked about it. Married now 6 years, happily married now 6 years. Yeah. Never have I done that. I've always started a relationship in the bed. Always. That was the goal. Right? Have sex with me and I'll marry you. It's that simple. Then I'm locking the freaking doors. You can't leave. No, you don't have to work. I'm going to take care of you. Call in. You want pizza? Call a pizza. Call for a pizza. Don't leave the house. You can't leave the house because you might find somebody else if she leaves the house. Where are we? Did we get to any steps yet? Oh, my God. So here, look, step 8 is, to me, this is what step 8 is about. Step 8 is about identifying the harm, right? This is where we become willing to make amends to all the people we have harmed. Put step 9 out of your mind. You may not make amends to these people, but you need to be honest about who you've harmed. And I'm not talking about what you did wrong. This is where we get clear on the difference between the wrong and the harm. What I did wrong, I stole money from my mom. Well, what was the harm? She couldn't trust her own son. She couldn't pay the bills because I stole her money. That was the harm. What was the harm? I cheated on my wife. That was the wrong, not the harm. How did that harm her? She can't trust anybody. She thought she could trust me. Now she takes that into the next relationship or into the rest of her life. She can't ever trust anybody again. How about the person I cheated with? Were they married? Well, if they were, I harmed somebody else. Maybe there was a husband involved there. Maybe they had some kids. Maybe I harmed them also. Big difference between what I did wrong and the harm. We actually created a sheet for the mechanics of the 8th step, and we took everybody's names off our 4-step guides that we had harmed, and we put those down on paper, and the next column was the harm, not the wrong. And the next column was the plan for the amends. And the next column is this something I can do now? Is this something I can do later? Is this something I can't do, not won't do, can't do at this time? And then we have a place where you check it off as it's done. Because we need to continue. This could be a lifelong process. There are amends that you can't make now that you'll be able to make somewhere down the road. There's people that you don't know where they are that are going to be put in front of you somewhere down the road. You're on a different plane now. God's running the show. You're not running the show anymore. This is where sponsorship is so important. So we get clear on the harm, and then we start knocking them off. I mean, I like to start doing some easy ones first. You know, the small amounts of money maybe, the ones that just, it's an omission of wrong, the face-to-face stuff. And then as we see the benefit, as you feel the benefit of making those amends, it just makes you want to keep doing them. It makes you want to keep, because there is a release, there's a freedom that comes in the 9th step. Yeah. Most of the promises come through in the 9th. I mean, there's promises in every step, and my major transformation took place in step 5. But the real freedom took place in 9, where I was able to hold my head high, where I was able to walk anywhere, where I was able to take my wife anywhere and not worry about who she was going to run into, and make sure they didn't talk, so they couldn't connect dots. And yet I'm enough free. I'm no longer haunted by police lights behind me. I still get a little nervous. But I know I got a driver's license. I know I got insurance. I know I'm not going to jail. I'm like, yeah, I got a driver's license. Here. Are you kidding me? See, because I'm that guy that drove for 8 years without a driver's license and got caught 4 times. Right? And some of those times I had paraphernalia with me. Yeah. So I was constantly afraid. Yeah. So, you know, Bill gives us some specific, you know, I don't know if I have time. One of my favorite stories is, because you could make a case that this whole program is based on this step. This whole program could be based on this step. You know, there's a gentleman named Frank Buckman, okay, and a Lutheran minister. And he starts this, and this is my little 9-step story. I have a couple 9-step stories, but we only have time for this one, I think. He starts a hospice. One of his dreams is to start a hospice for young teens who are troubled teens. You know, and he gets these investors together and he starts this hospice. And he's taking in troubled teens and homeless teens and drug addicted, alcoholic, and starts to help. That was his thing. He wanted to help teenagers, young adults. And he gets these investors, and his investors decide to take another route. They decide to go for the money. And he is so pissed off that they want to take it in another direction, that they want to take it to a for-profit organization from a non-profit to a for-profit organization, that he resigns his position and runs around for 2 years just full of resentment and anger. It's killing him. It's eating him alive. Eating him alive. You know how that is. Anybody have their whole day ruined by a resentment? How about a month or two? How about a year? How about your whole life? He just can't get over it. He couldn't get over it. And he wanders around for a couple years, and he hears about this evangelical Christian convention, this Keswick Convention over in Cambria, England. And he's doing nothing on his parents' dime. His parents are very wealthy. And he talks his parents into letting him go over to this convention to see this Baptist minister called H.B. Meyer. He's named H.B. Meyer, this famous Baptist minister of the day. And he's going there to hear this sermon by H.B. Meyer. Well, while he's gone his way to the sermon to hear H.B. Meyer, he hears some commotion in one of the meeting rooms. And he thinks there's some social event, and he goes in there thinking he might find a date. And instead, he hears a sermon by Jesse Penn Lewis on forgiveness. And in this sermon, Buckman has a transformation experience. He realizes that the freedom will come through forgiveness. And he sends a letter of forgiveness to every one of the board members that he was in business with, and he's free. For the first time in 2 years, he's free of the resentment. He prays for them and sends them a letter of apology, an admission of wrong. Freedom frees the forgiver. Right? The punishment of the thief is they can't trust anybody. The punishment of the liar is nobody tells the truth. But the forgiver is freed through the forgiveness. And why does that even matter? Well, because if we remember in chapter 2, Roland Hazard, the American businessman, hopeless alcoholic, searches the world for a solution, sees Carl Jung in Europe, and Carl Jung diagnoses him hopeless unless he has some kind of conversion experience. And Roland says, great, I'm a churchgoer. I'll go back to church. And he goes, it's not enough for you. You need to seek out something more powerful, more giving. You need to go out there and help people. And he connects with the Oxford groups created by Frank Buckman in 1921. He has a conversion in 1908. He starts the Oxford groups. He seeks the Oxford groups, which is the biggest Christian movement in the world at that time. And Buckman is doing Europe, and Sam Shoemaker is doing the United States. And he connects with Sam Shoemaker, and they start the Calvary Mission in New York City. Why is that significant? Well, because there's a guy named Ebbie Thatcher who's arrested for driving his car through somebody's house in upstate Vermont, drunk. And then the year after, he's arrested again for shooting pigeons off of his house on Main Street, Vermont. And Judge Seber Graves releases him, Horace Graves releases him to his son, Seber Graves, who is a member of the Oxford groups at the Calvary Mission. Right. Ebbie was probably the first ever court-ordered alcoholic. Right. And the judge court-orders him to the Oxford groups. So why is that significant? Because Ebbie's at the Calvary Mission in prayer and meditation, and Bill Wilson comes on his heart, and he asks where Bill is, and Shep Cornell tells him Bill's in bad shape. You need to go see him. He's going to die an alcoholic death. And Ebbie Thatcher carries the message of the Oxford groups to Bill Wilson in his kitchen and brings along the tenets of the Oxford groups, which we can see our steps in, right? Surrender, inventory, confession, restitution, helpfulness to others, and a belief and a dependence upon God. He brings our steps to Bill Wilson. Bill Wilson goes to the Calvary Mission and he recovers. And then we know he carries that message to Dr. Bob, and they carry it to AA number 3, and then Bill D, and then Ernie G, and here we are. The slender, Bill Wilson talks about that story as the slender threads that our lives hang on. These slender threads through history that are the difference between whether you and I are here sober or you and I die an alcoholic death. So you could really make a case that this whole program was founded on forgiveness. And we know later that Dr. Bob, the one thing he didn't want to do was his ninth step. And he couldn't stay sober. Right? We know Dr. Bob and Bill met on Mother's Day in 1935. But we know our Founders Day is June 10th, 1935. Which, if you're really into the history, it's really not. It's June 17th, but we're never going to change that. A little trivial, useless information right there. Well, there's a reason why it's not Mother's Day and June 10th, because Bob goes to a medical convention in Jersey every year, and his wife begs Bill not to let him go because he gets drunk every year, and Bill says, no, hell, he's sober. He's got to live around alcohol. Got to live a normal life. Let him go, and he didn't even make it on the train. He was drunk. He got drunk on the train on the way to Jersey. And he comes back, and he's supposed to do some surgery. And his nurse says, you better sober him up, cough him up, because he's got surgery coming up in a day or two. And they get Bob sobered up as much as they could, and they take him to do the surgery, and he's shaking so bad, and he says, I can't do it. He says, I'm shaking too bad to do the surgery. And Bill gives him a couple of goop balls at that time, probably equivalent to Valium now. Bob, by the way, had a little drug problem. We don't mention drugs here, but just a side note. He wasn't doing those surgeries or drinking all night without taking something. So he takes a couple goop balls, drinks a couple beers, and goes up and does a surgery. By the way, he was a proctologist. There's no history as to how that came out. I mean, there is none. You'd think there would be, but nobody knows how that. I'm just glad it wasn't my ass he was working on. But Bob comes back after that relapse. They go back to the Smith home, and Bob leaves, takes the car and leaves, and says, I got to go do something. And Bob goes and makes his amends to everybody he could find in that town and admitted that he had been doing surgery and been diagnosing while he was under the influence of alcohol. Important step, and an important step to continue. You know, if he doesn't go out and do those 19, he realized. And one thing he said I would never do is go out and make amends, so I'll lose my practice. And this, he was willing to give up his practice to stay sober. We're willing to go to any length for victory over alcohol. And Bill touches on just about everything here. The most important line, I think, in the ninth step is on page 77. It says, we go to them in a helpful and forgiving spirit. That's important. We're not going there to justify our behavior. We're not going there to argue the point. We're going there in a helpful and forgiving spirit. How can I be helpful? And I need to forgive them for what they've done to me. This is about cleaning off my side of the street. It has nothing to do with them. Three rules. Bottom of 77, under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Rule number one. Rule number two, we never try telling them what they should do. Rule number three, his faults are never discussed. Right? We don't go there for that reason. We don't go there. We don't want to leave an amends owing an amends. Because you don't want to go there and start an argument. Now, if they admit their wrongs, so much the better. But it doesn't matter. We're there to clean off our side of the street. We're there to get right with God, right with ourselves, right with you. And Bill gives us examples of all kinds of different, I mean, some specific instructions on how to get right in all different areas. I mean, the first one he touches on is money. Most alcoholics owe money. That's like an understatement, you know. I was one of them guys. That's one of those guys. I owed 50 grand. I don't know if I share it with you guys, but I had a higher powder in my life. When I came here in 1980, there was a lot going on in South Florida. It allowed me to drink around the clock. So I owed about $50,000 when I got here on credit card debt. I was paying my mortgage with credit cards, and I was snorting my paychecks. And I used to remember saying to Brian, I used to say, you know, do you know how old I'll be when I pay those credit cards off? He says, yeah, same age as if you never sent them any money at all. So get busy. Start making deals. You got to love Bill Wilson. Make the best deal you can, right? I mean, those are his words in the book. Make the best deal you can. And that's what I did. I got hold of them. I closed some accounts. I made payments. I shifted some accounts to no interest credit cards. And I played the game. It took me 10 years to pay them off. But I'm debt-free today. I was debt-free at 10 years, and I don't play the game anymore. If I can't pay them off, I don't use them. I know, you know, they're going to talk later about when other people are involved. I know, you know, some of you, some of us have done some shoplifting out there. You know, do you go to Publix and tell them you've been stealing from them for the last 10 years? I mean, if that's what it takes to stay sober, but there might be another way, right? It might not be a good idea if you have family to support or you have bills, you know, people depending on you to go throw yourself into a position where you may be arrested. You might want to see what kind of charities they're involved in and get right with the world and get right with yourself. Maybe start making donations to the charities that CVS or Walgreens or Publix or whoever you've been robbing all these years. Make some donations in their name. I had a cop that I owed money to in Pittsburgh. We decided one night, all drunk, to just redesign his car. Not a good idea. What were we thinking? We weren't. Yeah. But we, you know, look, it was, a month later, they said, look, just turn yourselves in. We just want financial restitution. We want this thing off the books. And we turned ourselves in. Signed papers to make financial restitution for the car, and I never paid them. And that's the one cool thing about being at this podium and doing this and taking guys through the steps, because every time I'd come around to the ninth step or start talking to the ninth step, in the back of my mind, whether I talked about it or not, I could thought of Nick. You owe Nick $600. Yeah. And I didn't want to talk about it. I don't know where Nick is, right? And I tried. Look, if you try to find a police officer, they call it stalking. So they don't give you a lot of information on how to find them. I mean, I tried all I could to find them. I started making donations to the Homeless Children Fund in Pittsburgh in his name, without my name on it, until the $600 was paid. Yeah. You know, it turns out I kind of like the charity. I still make donations to the charity. But you know what's going to happen, right? Someday God is going to put Nick in my life. And Nick's going to go, where the hell's my money? And I'm going to pay him. I'm going to pay him the $600. So there's a lot of ways to make amends, whether it be indirect or direct. You know, where we owe money, we pay money. That's what Bill says. Where we owe money, we pay it. Yeah. We talk about criminal offenses. A lot of people come to South Florida to run away from warrants. It's not just the sunny weather. I sponsor a lot of guys that have legal problems up north. Once again, we do the best we can. Maybe we secure counsel up there before we go throw ourselves to the courts and see what kind of consequences we're going to have to pay. If I have a family down here, it doesn't make sense for me to go to jail up there unless that's the only way I'm going to stay sober. Unless I got to get that monkey off my back. I just have to get that cloud from over my head. I know people who have done it. I know people have turned themselves in and done the time. They thought it was worth it. You know what they did? They went in there and started a meeting. One in particular. Young lady that I know. Ended up doing a year and year and a half, almost 2 years. Started a big book meeting in there. I had people coming out of jail saying, I met this girl named so-and-so doing a big book meeting in the prison, and she directed me to this meeting. She was helping other alcoholics and addicts while she was behind the walls. She's sober today. You know, turned herself in. You know, that's we're going to any length, aren't we? You know, what are we going to do to stay sober? How long can I hold my breath, right? When we have that cloud over us, we got that pit in our stomach. How long can I hold my breath? How long can I not deal with that? The infidelities and stuff like that is tough stuff, man. You know, we don't. The step is very specific. You know, what kind of amends we make direct? When do we make them? Wherever possible. Not whenever. Wherever possible. When don't we make them? When it'll hurt somebody, right? So you have to be clear. This is where sponsorship is so important. You know, do we go to our wives and admit our infidelities? Maybe. Maybe it's necessary. You know, maybe it brings about more harm. You know, no situation is there's no cut and dry answer to every situation. I accidentally admitted mine, and it kind of got out in the air. But a quick story. I'm asked to speak at a meeting. I'm about 9 months sober. I don't know anything about open and closed meetings. You know, my wife and I, she just lifted the restraining order. You know, I'm now seeing my children. We're now starting to go out again. There's a chance I might get back in the house, you know. And I get asked to speak at this meeting, and I have no recovery behind me, so I tell this war story. I torture these people with a war story. And, of course, all these infidelities come out in the war story. Well, my she was my ex-wife, actually, at the time. My ex-wife decided to see what this AA thing was all about, and she came in the back door while I was speaking, and my buddy Jeff is sitting like where Zach is, and he's going, God, and he's pointing in the back, and I know, oh, I got this, man, you know, and it all was laid out on the table, and I heard the door slam, and I go, what was that? And we didn't talk for a while, but this I will tell you, a healing began in both of us. She finally realized she wasn't crazy, that she wasn't imagining everything that I told her she was imagining. And I'm free. Now I'm not hiding anything. Now I don't care who she talks to, who she runs into, where, I don't care. You know? So I get free, she gets free. But it was a tough moment. You know? So how free do you want to be? You know, it becomes about how free do you want to be? You know? Family stuff is... You know, making amends to my mom don't want no money back. My mom wants her son back. My mom wants me to show up as a son, you know, the son that she always wanted. And that's really, I mean, that living amends is so important to show up. Now, look, I'm in a position today where I can help them out in financial ways, and I have over the years been able to do stuff like that and show up in that way unselfishly. But my mom just wants her son. You know, I almost lost my mom this year a couple of times. She had a knee replacement surgery and flatlined on the table. And she was revived. And I was talking to her, and I had the priest there, and we were talking. And my mom looked at me and said, why can't you get along with your sister? And it hit me that my mom was tortured by the fact that her two children didn't get along. And my sister and I are like oil and water. We just are, you know, I decided that I just was going to keep my sister at arm's length. And I never realized the effect that had on my mother. You know, and that night, I called my sister up and said, let's put this behind you. I was wrong. You know, there's no reason for us not to get along. And my mother was so happy because my sister, I had my sister come down because she needed to be there. And my sister and I are standing at my mother's bedside, and I never saw that woman smile like that before. That's what they want. The intangibles. My mother wouldn't take the money if I offered it to her. You know, that she don't want that stuff. She wants that. She wants her family getting along, loving each other. That was an amends right there. And, you know, look, I know that if I lost my mother, and fortunately I was blessed to have her for a few more years, I think. But if my mother passed away today, I know that I don't owe her any amends. You know, that we're good. You know, and she loves me, and she doesn't ever bring up anything that I've done wrong to her, and she knows that I'm the man that she wanted me to be all along today, And I thank Alcoholics Anonymous for that, because I thank God for that. I had nothing to do with that, except for following some simple rules outlined in this book. Yeah. And that family stuff, that stuff for children. How do you give? My sons. One of the things I think I shared with you guys when I was doing step four is that one of the things I hate the most is that I relive that moment when my dad knocked my mother on her back and sat on her and slapped her around in front of us kids. I'll never have that picture go away. That picture, when I talk about that, I want to tell you that happened every night, but it didn't. I think about it every night. Yeah. When I think about my dad, that picture comes to mind. You know, I became that guy. You know, my two kids saw me knock their mother down in front of them in our family room. And I became what I hated in my father. How do you make amends for that picture? How do you make that go away? That's a lifetime of showing up and being the father I'm supposed to be and showing up differently than that. My sons laugh about stuff that I think is tragic. I mean, they get together and they talk about some of the stuff that took place in our home, and I want to hide. You know, the stories that we tell at dinners and stuff, the tragically funny stories, right? Like, they're funny now, but back then they were tragic. My son was talking last Christmas. We went out together. My son was telling my younger son that when he mouthed off to me one time, he saw that look in my face, and he ran into his bedroom and locked the door, and I put my fist through his door to unlock the door from the other side. How do you make amends for that? No child should have to live in that kind of fear. No child should think they have to run and lock their door from their father. I'm just not that guy anymore, you know, and I have to show up not being that guy anymore, you know, practicing these principles in my affairs. I know I ran late. We'll pick up there next week. Thanks.
All right, let's thank Pat again real quick. And Stephanie's going to come up, our wonderful secretary. Stephanie!
Hi, my name is Stephanie, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I have asked Winter to please come up and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Winter.
Hi, Winter.
We are not cured of alcoholism, recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Yeah. 1940-style Big Book sponsorship from forward to second edition Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. May I please see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? And is there anyone in need of a sponsor? Could you please raise your hand? Would you please stand up? Okay, recovered alcoholics, let's get her back to God. Please join us Monday nights for the Big Book Study meeting where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30, and the Big Book Study starts promptly at 7:15. We have CDs, mugs, large print Big Books, the Little Red Book, and Big Book dictionaries for sale in the back. Also, the 42nd Annual Florida State Convention Waves of Serenity is coming up. That is going to be at the Beautiful Harbor Beach Marriott Resort and Spa. More information can be found in the back. The West Dixie and Miami bid for FCYPAA cordially invite you to the annual holiday party. Personal discretion entry contribution requested for general service. No one will be turned away. Everyone is welcome. You can find more information in the back. AA's Got Talent has tickets for sale now, $12. If you are interested in going to the talent show, please see Robert. Robert, please stand. Robert will please stand. And Robert has tickets for sale. And also, the third annual Chapters to Recovery is coming up June 29th through July 1st of 2018. Registration information can be found in the back. And Alcoholics and God will be having their annual Coney Island Hot Dog Extravaganza on Monday, January 8th. It will be happening with the Big Book. Actually, Pat R. will be sharing his story. So please come out. Fellowship will be at 6:30. The meeting is at 7:15. It is a free event, so all are welcome. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week.
Thank you, Stephanie. So tonight's session and all of our past sessions are online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. So anytime you're home or in your car and wanted to hear a message, you can do that from either tonight or from the past. Also, like Stephanie said, Monday nights, we've got our Big Book Study. It's upstairs on the third floor in this building. Starts at 7:15. We get there early. If you want to come, bring side dishes and fellowship. If you're going to thank Pat, just line up down the center aisle tonight. And with that, happy holidays, and we'll close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Profit me anything. this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Out in the dark, I'm gonna let it shine. Out in the dark, I'm gonna let it shine. Out in dark, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little